Hi, welcome to Journey of the Monkey King. I'm Quiva, and I'm joined by my friend MJ.
Hello!
This is going to be slightly different. We're not going to talk about a chapter this week. In fact, we're not really going to be talking at all, because what you're going to be listening to is when I went on a show MJ does called They Did What Now.
Yep. So this time I had to do work.
Yeah, do you want to explain what They Did What Now is?
So They Did What Now is a show where one of the running jokes is I fuck up the introduction. something awful.
Yeah, and I'm after putting you on the spot. So
yeah, well, you did tell me what we were gonna be doing. So it is a show where I get comedians, performers, and other people that I like and find interesting to talk about their favorite, like, ballsy moves from history, or, you know, out of left field actions, just things that are kind of bizarre and off the wall, and just kind of that it's a bit of a double take, yeah. Is the criteria. So Quiva was lovely enough to come on Saturday. I don't know when this is going out, so dating it might be bad.
Yeah, this is probably not going to go out for like another 2 weeks. So
okay, it was on a Saturday. I remember it well. it was a Saturday, and the dew had fallen softly on the meadow through near my estate where I would frolic. I live in a box room in Drumcondra. Yeah, so Quiva was lovely enough to come on and talk about the real world inspiration behind Journey to the West.
I don't think we've said this on the show. I think I deliberately edited out one or two times we mentioned it. But Journey to the West is, in fact, real historical person fan fiction, basically. So we met the monk Xuan Zhang in the last chapter, and he is nominally the actual main character. Not really, the Monkey King's the real main character. Yeah. But the plot is actually meant to be about his pilgrimage to India to bring back holy scriptures in the book as ordained by Buddha, and in reality as ordained by himself. So what you're going to listen to now is a conversation myself and MJ had on their show about this real-life monk who inspired this novel.
It is still up on the Hysteria Network on Facebook if you want to see our lovely faces.
Yes.
And then I talk about polio for a bit, and that is fun.
Yes, and like watch the rest of the show and all the shows on there, MJ, and the whole Hysteria crew are great.
Yay!
Cross-promotion!
Oh, yeah. Woo!
I want to talk about a guy called Chen Hui, or Jian Zhang, who was born in China around 602. So this happened a very, very long time ago.
Okay, cool.
I don't know how much like you want to ramble about backstory, but he was the son of like a magistrate for the Sui Dynasty courts. But his family kind of fled in secluded part of the country when Sui Dynasty wasn't doing so well around this time. And eventually it completely collapsed and was replaced by the Tang Dynasty.
Okay.
And by the time that happened, Chen Hui's father had died, and he had went to live with his older brother, who was a Buddhist monk, in his monastery. And he started studying to be a monk himself. So he became a Buddhist monk who was studying since he was like, I don't know, 12 or something. I should have made better notes. And he eventually got fed up with all of the academic debates and all the splits and different interpretations and schools and everything. Mm. And he got the idea into his head that if this was down to not having good translations of, or sometimes not any copies of, the kind of the like fundamental Buddhist text that would have been originally written in Sanskrit. And he thought the Chinese translations were bad. And if we just had the original ones, everything would be fine and no one would argue anymore.
It's an idealistic take, but I kind of get, you know, we're supposed to be arguing about this book, and we're supposed to be parsing this text and, you know, really, really thinking about it. But we don't actually have a copy of the book. So you're just like that just seems like argument built on. It seems like a pretty intense game of religious Chinese whispers is what we're looking at here.
It's never stopped Christians arguing over like their own copies of the Bible in English or German or whatever either.
This is true. I mean, translation of religious texts is an absolutely fascinating field. It's just like the nuances that certain words can have in one language, you know, are just lost in another. And when there are so many translations down the generations, it's actually really kind of fascinating to see the politics of translation in general. Is just quite cool.
Buddhism had come to China like hundreds of years before and just kind of evolved in its own way in China, kind of separate from India as well. So they had just down all these interpretations of schools and everything that were really, I guess, maybe a bit disconnected from the original is kind of what he thought.
Right.
And so he wanted
to get... he was a purist, a fundamentalist in a way.
Yeah, I guess because but he wanted to get the original translations. That was the original copies, or copies in the original Sanskrit, is all I might say. But it was not a good time for the international book trade because, like I said, the Tang Dynasty had kind of just become a thing, and they were at war and kind of trying to establish their borders against the Gok Turks, I think it was. And so then international travel was banned without the express permission of the emperor. And so he applied for permission to travel abroad, and he was just flatly rejected. So he said, fuck it, and just went anyway. He snuck over the border at the Jade Gate, kind of crossing over into, I think, what is still part of modern day China, but like then was going out into kind of like Mongol territory and this kind of thing. And he was about 27 when he did this. So he went over the border, went north over the Gobi Desert.
Wow.
And yeah, what the stuff I read up on it is a little bit vague on details of his travel. A lot of things seem to write as if he traveled completely by himself. But then, I read one article that you mentioned in passing, like him having a disciple with him. I don't know, it's vague. He gets all the credit anyway.
Okay. So he's literally crossing mountain and desert and avoiding war zones and everything just to get a copy of this book in the original Sanskrit.
Yeah.
Awesome. I think you've got the route here.
Yeah, so this is a bit of a spoiler for everything else he's gonna like for the whole trip. But yeah, this is it's fine, show it. But this is like all the way he went. So from Chang'an as the capital, up through like what's modern day Mongolia to Uzbekistan. He got help from like the king of Turpan there, who was like a Buddhist, who gave him like some valuables to trade and some letters of like, you know, the letters of permission or whatever, like saying, you know, I vouch for this guy. But then he almost got robbed on his way to Karasar, or was it Karashar? I'm not sure how to pronounce these things. I should have looked this up.
It's okay.
But he kept going. He got all the way out. You can see over there in the west to Samarkand, which is like the edge of like the Persian Empire at the time.
Whoa.
So he walked all the way from China basically to the Middle East, looped back down into India then. And as you can see on the map there, he spent a lot of time just traveling around India. So when he got there, you know, he didn't find, you know, Indian Buddhists quite as unified in their understandings and doctrines and he might have hoped. And there was, you know, another couple hundred schools of Buddhism there, all completely different over new things that he didn't even argue about in China. So instead of giving up, he just spent 15 years traveling around India, like
just trying to find Buddhists who were chill.
And gathering books. So he spent 15 years just traveling around India, studying basically. Eventually he did head back to China, but on the way there he sent a letter asking for a pardon for illegally leaving the country first, which is
for
prudent,
like 20 years at this point.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, 20-year-old crime, but he's still being cautious about it.
Daya has chimed in. Daya is a historian, and we love her very much. But yeah, part of the Sasanian Empire or new Persian Empire.
Okay.
Cool. So, yay! Now we know. Now we know. Thank you. Thank you for that, and thank you for watching. So how long did it take this guy to walk to India? I just gotta know. Like,
It took him about a year to get there.
Okay.
And
then 15
and then
years
in India itself. While he was there, he picked up a collection of 657 books.
Wow.
And
fuck.
It took a train of 20 pack horses to carry it all back. I tried to find numbers to put that in perspective, and I didn't like find any figures for like how many books were being published in China or India at the time, but I found a paper that suggested that this was like about six times the total number of books made in a given year in Western Europe at the time.
This is pre-printing press. All of these books are handwritten. They're copied out.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if they have one woodblock printing at that point. They might have. I'm not sure. Not much of a history.
Yeah.
despite this. And if anyone wants to look it up,
despite the topic.
If anyone wants to look it up, that the number I picked that up from that was from the June 2009 edition of the Journal of Economic History. There was an article in there, like trying to study in there, trying to estimate the book production of Western Europe. But yeah,
you've already done like. Sorry, there's a delay coming in here, so I'm interrupting you, which is not a good host thing. I was about to say you've already done like more research than maybe 80% of my guests so far. So, yay.
Interesting, like, because I want.
He brought back all of these hundreds of books.
Yeah, and so when he got back to China, he was actually offered a job by the Emperor Taizong. I don't know. I guess he was just really impressed, and he turned it down. He just said nope. He just wants to translate this shit. So he spent a year writing up a travelogue of his journey, and then spent the rest of his life just translating all these books.
Amazing.
Or trying to. I think he died before he like was able to translate them all, but
yeah, I hope he managed to at least read them. I really, really hope so. But I'm also very glad he didn't have to sneak over the border with 20 pack horses full of books.
That
would have been a problem, I think. Just kind of like, yeah. I mean, you could possibly get them through maybe one at a time, or but yes, that's amazing. That's fabulous. Deus actually chimed in with this. Thank you. You're the best participant. coincidentally, printing was developed by the Tang around that time, but I'm not aware of how far spread or common that would be. But yes, should all be handwritten, but they may have been able to print it in China after getting them. Oh. So after going to the trouble of smuggling 627 books across the border, then printing is invented, yeah. And that's fine. But that's really cool. I wonder how that spreads in and how many of these were printed.
Yeah, there's one funny thing that's kind of worth noting is that due to his efforts after his translations were you know somewhat influential after that and ended up basically just spawning another school of Buddhism in China. I should really look up how to pronounce things. Faxiang? Faxiang school? Or at least, I don't think he founded it, but he like popularized it, I think. He just made the problem worse.
Yeah, he just introduced another sect and another schism. After all that, after 16 years and you know a book smuggling operation on a scale, I imagine that was not heard of before. After that, he just creates. At yet another sect of Buddhism for people to argue over. I was like, yeah. People will argue. People will argue about anything. And that's what it's. I love it when it's about really stupid things. That I find it kind of beautiful.
Like religion.
The best. I don't know. Go stupider. I think is that the best argument I've ever had. Well, the best conversation I've ever had. With my godmother was it was like a 20-minute argument over whether an automatic door is truly automatic to open it. I'd be very interested to hear like literally anyone's thoughts on this because I am this was years ago, but I am definitely fucking about this.
I suppose they're still operated by a person in the sense that you going towards it causes it to open.
Yes, but it's like a door operates on it's a hinge. It's like if you're pressing a button, then you're activating a fucking pulley mechanism. It's semi-automatic at best. This is the hill I'm gonna die on, Quiva. You know, this is if
semi-automatic
if I could
9mm doors.
if I could walk to India. To justify myself on this one, if that was a thing that happened to have that had to happen, I would do it, and I'm not afraid to say that. But yeah, so how does this feed into our favorite Ming Dynasty novel?
Yes, so this monk Chen Hui or Zhan Zhang. Became you know a bit of a folk hero after this and over like the next couple hundred years there were just lots of stories about this kind of pilgrimage built up and kind of got amplified and you know embellished at some point part of the traditional story involved him getting a monkey companion for some reason and this kind of grew and grew and grew until in the Ming Dynasty, like 800 years later, someone wrote a novel called Journey to the West, which features a version of this pilgrimage that basically bears no resemblance to the story I just told. but is a really... great. It's a really cool book that's really, really underselling it. It's like one of the most influential books ever written. It is ridiculously huge in like East Asia. So as MJ put in the little promo on Facebook for this, it's what Dragon Ball Z was eventually, or Dragon Ball started off based on it. And then Dragon Ball went on in its own thing, became Dragon Ball Z. It's quite different. But yeah, this monk's pilgrimage is the reason that you have anime.
Okay. Journey to the West is
we do have a podcast
which is yes, and the title of that podcast is Journey to the Monkey King. I'm on this podcast. This is horribly humiliating. I'm sorry. I have extra spicy brain. today because I did spend several hours sandwiched in a room with loud music coming through one wall and loud music coming through another wall, and then a blender was involved for a while. So like my brain is slightly minced. I'm gonna use the word minced. My brain has been minced, Quiva.
Yeah.
but I apologize for that. We have a podcast called Journey of the Monkey King.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
And so that is basically just me going through this plot of that novel with MJ as they are frequently flabbergasted and blown away by its amazingness.
Yes, this is true.
And we've basically just gotten to the part where Shanzang himself has been introduced. So I think we're probably going to do a little episode as well, just comparing the story I just told to all the stuff that we read in that last chapter, which bears no resemblance to it at all.
We had a bit of an interlude there. The book is nuts. The book is utterly, utterly nuts. And even the chapters, like, you've got this awful habit of coming in and saying, oh, this chapter is going to be boring, and then like it opens with like the first one you said about that, and I was just there going, no, it's going to be amazing, this is a great show. And then it opened with a still monkey with laser eyes, and I'm just like,
yeah, the monk what? Doesn't actually
what,
show
what
up
standards until, like... do you have
The monk doesn't
what
show
standards
up to, like,
do you have for interesting?
First seven chapters are just a magic monkey causing a lot of trouble for a lot of gods.
Yeah, he's now triple immortal. Quadruple immortal? Is he triple immortal or quadruple immortal at this point?
He's like immortal from like four different sources, yeah.
Including going up to up and asking to speak to the manager of death.
Yeah.
And just creating so much of a noise to the manager of death that they've just like, this guy's too much trouble. We're not having him here.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite, like, that's definitely would like top my top 10 of the whole book.
Yeah.
It's great.
Because
it's on Spotify, it's on iTunes, it's on all those places. There's a Twitter account, which is Monkey King Pod. And go listen to it. It's good. This has been blatant self-promotion. Yep.
This has been blatant self-promotion. Yes, but it's fun. And I like it very much because I don't have to do anything except turn up and be really just a clown and try not to get myself cancelled. Although I think you actually have to be successful before you get cancelled.